everyone. Welcome to myself, Max McGillivray of Beanstalk. We have got a really interesting and a very important broadcast today with two amazing ladies from an amazing business called Unseen UK. Justine, Rachel, can you say hello to everyone?
Hello, everybody.
Good morning.
Fantastic. So we were just in our warm-up room and we were talking about the merits of football. That Justine supports a fantastic football team. Justine, are you going to nominate who that is, or should we brush over that? Or should we brush over the fact that Rachel doesn't even know what football is?
We can't.
I'm so typically English. We should have talked about the weather rather than football. So let's get to this, because I've been thinking long and hard about this week. That as I said, the broadcast that we've done this week have been amazing, fantastic. We've been with Global Women Fresh promoting the diversity of women in fresh produce internationally. We were live yesterday with South Africa promoting South African avocados. And all of those people are in businesses or sectors that are really doing good. With Unseen UK, I've taken a deep breath here, because having previously interviewed the CEO of Unseen, Andrew Wallace OBE, He was actually really shocking, ladies, and we'll get into this as to some of the stats that he was giving us to the issues about modern day slavery. So let's get into this. It's the only way we're going to do this. So working towards a world without slavery is a big aim and a big task, but the team at Unseen believe they can do it. They're concentrating their efforts on three main areas: supporting, equipping, and influencing, so they can start to tackle the issue in a way that really works. Their specialist care is the first step in the fight against slavery. Through supporting survivors, their provision gives them a safe place to recover from trauma and rebuild their lives. Their practices are researched thoroughly, enabling them to identify the key issues surrounding slavery and exploitation, and equipping themselves and others with effective, targeted solutions. They also recognize the importance of influencing the systems that keep slavery hidden. Tackling issues such as supply and demand are vital if we're going to eradicate slavery. They hope that one day their work is no longer needed. It's going to be achieved by working in partnership with communities, businesses, governments, and other organizations that can stamp out slavery for good. But while there are victims of trafficking, they want to be here to offer them safety, hope, and choice that they deserve. So on today, we've got Justine. Justine is the executive director of Unseen, and will be covering the strategic elements and how Unseen can help with services and training. She's also the deputy police and crime commissioner for Bedfordshire in the UK. Rachel is an international lawyer and also the modern slavery helpline manager at Unseen. She's going to be talking about the latest data and giving the picture of what's happening across the country over the last year, including the impact of the pandemic. So ladies, you both really intrigue me, because both of you are highly intelligent, highly commercial, very forward. That you could be aligned to any businesses. You could be in politics. You could be running a football club. You could, but you're working with a business which is, if you're going to be very negative, that there is no end, and especially after the pandemic and the increase that we're seeing in modern day slavery. Ladies, why are you with Unseen? Why are you looking to make this difference? Justine, you go first, please.
Well, I think it's an issue that affects everybody, and I think we need to raise that awareness. And we need to let people know that, you know, it is happening in the 21st century. It's happening in the UK. I have a background in social policy. And this issue, when I worked with the government, was one of those issues that I just felt I had to do more about. People weren't understanding that it was happening in the UK, not understanding that it was about men, women, boys and girls. And so working for a charity like Unseen that has that massive aspiration of a world without slavery, which, you know, that is a huge aspiration, but it's one we have to work towards. So, you know, using all of our smarts and our intelligence and our understanding of what's happening out there, and through the guise of Unseen, which is, you know, a leading charity in the UK, it's a great opportunity for us to really make a difference to the lives of the vulnerable who are caught up in exploitation.
Justin, thank you. Rachel, your views, please. Why are you involved with this charity? When you could be doing other things, why are you looking to make a difference?
Somewhat similar to what Justine said, I couldn't not. Wow. I was woefully ignorant, really, and didn't realize how pervasive modern slavery was around the world. And so when I first learned of it and really started digging into it, I couldn't leave it alone. And I couldn't return to my prior career. It just kind of gripped me. And I was pretty horrified that it was happening across the UK and across the world in plain sight. And when I thought about social justice and human rights issues, to me, the egregious nature of modern slavery and all of the horror and trauma and abuse that goes into it, it was like every human rights abuse wrapped into one, because yep. you had that sexual abuse and physical abuse and lack of freedom and lack of choice. And it really gripped hold of me and I wanted to address it. And with Unseen, I really appreciate the ambition of the organization. I love it when our CEO says we're trying to put ourselves out of business, that we really are trying to decrease the problem versus we don't want to be taking care of survivors forever because we don't want there to be victims in the first place.
And when I conducted this interview with Andrew, that's why I was really keen to do this broadcast with yourselves. With when Andrew stated, well, Max, you're going to be on a computer, you're going to have a camera, you're going to have a mic, you're going to have some lights. I can guarantee you, Max, that unfortunately, that modern day slavery will have touched all of those elements that you're involved with. That it is everywhere. We major in the food sectors and the international fresh food sectors, and that there's a lot of companies that will be promoting that anti-slavery statement, which is fantastic. But it's not that I'm concerned that it's just a poster on a website. I really want us to be making a difference. And there's been some great initiatives, and there are some great initiatives from some great companies out there and some great retailers. But it's a bit like some of the sustainability and the packaging issues that have had to be parked when we were in the real midst of COVID, and then now coming back because hopefully things are settling down. Likewise, modern day slavery potentially is going to get worse in the short term before it gets better. And that's why we are really keen to promote Unseen UK in the UK and also on an international basis, so that we can keep this conversation going. And if companies and individuals are looking for professional help, they can come to yourself, Rachel, they can come to yourself, Justine, they can come to Andrew, they can come to the rest of the Unseen team. Is that okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So let's do this. I'm just going to have a one-on-one interview with Justine and Rachel and just get into some deeper detail. If you in the audience have got any questions of Justine or Rachel, feel free to fire them in. And at the end, we're going to have a fast-paced Q&A with Justine and Rachel, then positively wrap up. Ladies, if that's okay, Rachel, if it's okay, if you could just turn off your video. So Justine, let's get into the nuts and bolts of this. What is modern slavery and why should we care? Why do we need to care?
Well, modern slavery in its simplest terms is abuse and exploitation of one person over another for profit. And unfortunately, there's very little chance of prosecution for the perpetrators, but really terrible human rights outcomes for the victims. And these outcomes are lifelong. You know, we're talking about people who are being abused and exploited sexually, physically, being made to do activities that they wouldn't ordinarily do. And we all sit in our ivory towers thinking that this doesn't apply to us, but it applies to every single one of us. Regardless of what we're doing in our lives, we need to make a difference. We are making decisions every day about goods and services, for example, that we use. If we get our driveway block paved, you know, people turning up, are we really confident that they're getting paid, that the money that we are paying for those services? We walk down the high street, you know, to get our nails done or to take our car to the car wash. All of these are examples of where modern slavery can take place. And then when you start to think about young people being forced to move drugs, being threatened by gangs, that if they don't do what they're told, they could be in hot water themselves, they could be physically punished, or their families could be at risk. We need to make this an issue that everybody cares about. We really need to make sure that we're moving forward, that we're not just picking the pieces up and providing help and support to those who are in these situations, but we're actually trying to prevent it from happening in the first place.
Justine, Well done. And I remember just before we went into the various lockdowns, I live and we're broadcasting from Bury St Edmunds in Suffolk. And unfortunately, like a lot of areas, there's a county lines drug issue. So anyone on an international basis, if you don't understand the terminology, county lines is a network of criminal gangs that supply drugs into areas within the UK. The school looked to be very proactive, and they brought in a couple of very good, eloquent policemen to talk to about 500 parents about the county lines issue to expose it. And in the dialogue with this, I think it was a chief inspector of Suffolk, he said that one of the unfortunate byproducts of this is that the young people get involved in slavery. Mum next to me said to another mum, "Slavery? What's he talking about?" And so there we were finding out about county line drug lines, but we're not talking about modern day slavery. And that's why I was so shocked by the interview that I had with Andrew. And I think that's again why we need to promote this issue, so we're all even more aware of it, so that we can see it when it's happening to report it. So Unseen, what is the role of Unseen? I'm slightly confused as to, should this not be government? Should this not be police? Why has Andrew had to create Unseen? Why has he had to get in amazing people like yourself and Rachel and Tom and the rest of the... What is the role of Unseen in all of this, please?
Well, that's a really good question. You know, for me, from the outset, this is about collaborating, partnering, and making sure that all aspects of society really help and contribute to tackling this pervasive issue. Unseen was set up because we recognised that there was an issue with people being held in situations of slavery, being forced in sexual exploitation. And what we do is we want to provide direct survivor support services through our safe housing and our reintegration and outreach support. But we also want to inform and equip others to really understand what modern slavery is, to get the training that they need on the front line. And this might be policing, it might be local authorities, it could be NHS workers who are dealing with situations on a daily basis and might not even recognize that someone's a victim. But we also know that businesses play a really crucial role, and that's why at Unseen we work with businesses right across the spectrum, regardless of sector or industry, because we know that it affects everybody. And you talked earlier about, you know, the food industry. You know, if you wear clothes, if you eat food, if you drink tea or coffee, if you have a mobile phone, a smartphone, you know, 40 to 60 slaves are working to furnish our lifestyles without us even trying. And that's the magnitude of what we're talking about. So it's really important that we pull together government, law enforcement, the third sector, to really make sure that we're not just picking up the pieces, we're stepping off that treadmill, that we're actually looking at how we prevent it. And one of the key areas that we work in is really around the UK-wide Modern Slavery and Exploitation Helpline that we set up in 2016. And the whole ethos of that is not just to provide a helpline or lifeline to those who are held in situations, but it's about providing information to those on the front line, giving them an understanding of what it is they need to do and how they can support somebody. But then also thinking about all of the data that we get, which is, you know, it's such rich data. How do we play that back into government and get them to think about this, think about their strategy, think about their approach, think about how we can look at those prevention activities, not only within the UK, but also beyond our borders? Because we're talking about, you know, potentially 46 to 65 million people held in situations of slavery right across the globe. Wow. And global estimates back in 2014 estimated that this trade made about $150 billion per year. And that's a really conservative estimate. We need to make sure that everybody, regardless of where you are, regardless of what job you do, you know, we're all members of the public, we're all members of the community. We need to make sure that we're doing everything we can to stop people from being in situations of exploitation and slavery.
So just in frightening figures, again, that replicate the conversation that I had with Andrew on the pandemic that we're all going through. have things got better?
Well, unfortunately, I think the pandemic has suppressed it in one area and it's popping up elsewhere. Okay. So, you know, some of those sectors or venues that we would have seen previously, like car washes and nail bars, obviously they weren't functioning for most of 2020. So what we saw was obviously fewer cases in those situations, but we actually saw an increase in construction sites, in wow. food production, right from farms through food packaging, production. And we saw it, and we're starting to see it again in places like hospitality. As the economy starts opening up, we'll start to see yep. more and more cases. So it is about, you know, the general public quite often will be our eyes and ears on the ground, and most of our calls predominantly would come from the general public. When you haven't got as many people out, when some of the venues are closed down, then you don't have those opportunities. Our concern is what's happened to those vulnerable people that were in those car washes and in those nail bars. In a few cases, through to the helpline, we've understood that they've actually been shifted into other sectors. And this is where we talk about modern slavery just being about profit, being about money. You know, the individuals that perpetrate don't really care how they get their money. They just want to make sure that they get it.
Yep. Thank you. And we represent the fresh food sectors on a UK and international basis. What are your thoughts about modern slavery within food, fresh food, agriculture, the supply chains? Do you think it exists? Well, I know the answer to this one, but do you think it exists?
Absolutely. Yeah, it absolutely exists. We see situations right down at source level in the farm, you know, with people picking vegetables and herbs right the way through the supply chain. So that food processing, food packaging, logistics, and, you know, it's just pervasive. It's happening everywhere. And what we want to do is make sure that where there are areas and sectors like food agri, where we have low paid, potentially low skilled workers, we've got seasonal and temporary labour, you know, there's a lot of risk there if we don't manage that supply chain and that supply of labour effectively. So it's really about making sure that we put the right checks and balances in, we apply the right due diligence to make sure that workers at the end of the supply chain are not being abused and exploited, not being forced to work long hours for little or no pay, and we can really give them an opportunity to get themselves out of those situations and not be infiltrated by a third party. And quite often it's not necessarily, you know, the farm owners or the food packaging or processing sites that are creating this environment. They're probably not supporting or helping because they're not applying the right due diligence, but actually it's generally a third party that's infiltrating that, finding the workers who are vulnerable, putting them to work, and then taking the money from them. So that might be financial exploitation that's actually happening outside of the workplace. So it can sometimes be quite difficult to spot, but it's not impossible. And it is really around professional curiosity, just, you know, something doesn't feel right, you know, quite often it's not. And that's why the Modern Slavery and Exploitation Helpline provides such an important aspect to everything that we're doing, because if we can have specialist people who are trained to give that help and advice in the moment, then hopefully we can prevent more people from getting into these situations, mm-hmm. and we get more information about what's happening on the ground, which can support our conversations with the government, with law enforcement, with the Gangmasters and Labour Abuse Authority, who play an important role in the food agri sector.
Yeah, there's an example I always use of Legal & General. Legal & General, one of the largest pension funds in the UK, and they have stated to the 100 biggest companies that they invest in that if you don't have a diversified board by the end of 2022, we're going to be withdrawing the funding. So that's put the I was going to say the willies, that's wrong, scared those companies to actually now create change within those businesses and create that diversified board. Retailers in the UK are very, very good as our wholesale and food service companies as a whole, that they want their suppliers to make sure that they've got a modern day slavery statement and that they're upholding it. And so they, through the top down, creating societal change, are we're not requesting, telling their suppliers that they've got to have a modern day slavery policy. And it's all about, in some respects, the moral compass that, as you say, Justin, very eloquently, it's your commercial curiosity. If you running your business, yes, you're going to be very busy. If you've got a third party coming in and there's a drama because a retailer wants supply, that you cannot, under these circumstances, obviously take shortcuts and let something like it is your moral compass to make sure that you're adhering to this and not allowing this exploitation to happen. There's so much you could do by just a little, by making sure that you have that modern day slavery policy, but also engaging with unseen. So just on that side, Justin, how do you work with businesses and how can you prevent this from occurring within those businesses, within those systems, within those ecosystems?
Well, I think the first thing to recognize is that this is not an overnight solution. So we need to look at this in the longer term. We need to make sure that businesses know where they are and where they need to get to. And that's what we do with businesses, you know, providing that gap analysis, really working with businesses to say, how can we get from where we are now to where we need to be? Really putting aside that compliance mentality, because, you know, for me, compliance equals tick box exercise. It's exactly the same with the modern slavery statement. You know, and I was the senior policy advisor at the Home Office, drafted the Modern Slavery Act, was very integral in bringing forward Section 54 around transparency and supply chains. But this was really about a nudge factor, about tell us what you're doing to stop and prevent modern slavery. But I think people have assumed that the statement is the be all and end all. It's a piece of paper. Ultimately, what's really important is what happens beneath that. You know, we have to look at policies and practices, and that includes recruitment, that looks at health and safety. We have to look at how we work with third parties, you know, suppliers, subcontractors. So many businesses that I talk to say to me, well, we'll look down the supply chain. And when I say, but have you looked in your own organization? Have you looked at how you work with subcontractors? Who does your cleaning? You know, who does your canteen? And they go, oh, I never thought about that. And this is where we're trying to make it very clear that actually it should just be part of your being. This is about doing good business. This should not be sitting in a box on the periphery. You know, if you look at the kind of ESG, environmental, social, governance perspective, the social element is all about people. You know, if we don't treat our people right, then what are we doing as a business? Yeah. And it really touches on that point around investment. You know, the investment community are now starting to really take note of modern slavery and the issues around worker exploitation. So if you're a business that really doesn't care about this and you're looking for investment, then you're increasingly going to be asked, well, what are you doing? And it's the same if you are within a supply chain. You know, all of the big brands and big business are now required through legislation to say what they're doing on an annual basis. What has actually happened in reality is that they're pushing that pressure down the supply chain. So regardless of the fact that we've got a £36 million pound threshold, all of those smaller businesses are now having to say, well, what are you doing? You know, so we're trying to equip, we're trying to help and get smaller businesses in particular to really understand what they need to do in order to improve their overall approach to modern slavery, but actually to give that assurance to those that they work with that they are preventing it, they're doing everything they can and they can minimise it. Anyone who writes a statement and says we have no modern slavery here, you know, is opening themselves up for some kind of future disaster. And I think what we need to recognise is it's not if, it's when. Yeah. And when it happens, are you really in a position to be able to deal with that effectively, to not put the workers at additional risk, and to work with those in your supply chain to make sure that you can learn lessons from that and that you can move on and you can protect your workers, your business and the wider community?
Wow. And to be just trying to simplify it for my simple head, is the end game here to starve this criminal fraternity that are exploiting these individuals, to starve them of oxygen? So if they're going to company A, they know they're not going to get an inroad in because they just don't allow any third parties or this practice ever to happen within, I'm going to use that word again, ecosystem. So they go to another business, same thing, can't get in, another business. So is that the end game, that, again, using this expression of driving societal change, driving business change, we will not allow this. So we as a, let's just major on the food side, as a food community, we will, so this criminal fraternity will not come in, and hopefully they'll see, well, this isn't working, we're just going to stop this, we're going to go off elsewhere and do. Is that the end game?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're quite right. It's about coming together. We need to make our society intolerant to modern slavery. Yeah. And the only way we can do that is by working together. And I always use the analogy of a bit of a whack-a-mole. You know, you hit it in one area and it pops up somewhere else. So you always have to be on your game. And this is why I think, you know, that the compliance element of what we're doing, you know, is slightly stayed. We need to look at continuous improvement. You know, you put a statement out today, tomorrow you still have potential risks. If you don't keep your eye on the game, if you don't keep moving forward, then you will just increase those risks over time. So it is about drawing together the business community, you know, a government, law enforcement, third sector, to say, how do we make our society more intolerant to modern slavery? And how can we make sure that when we put a barrier in place, we're not allowing the perpetrators to circumvent that in some other way? And we always have to stay one step ahead of the game. And as I said, it's really back to continuous improvement, and it's about learning lessons. If something goes wrong, why did it go wrong? Let's stop that from happening again. Let's work out how we make sure that if there's the potential for it to happen in the future, that we're there, we're working with it, we're understanding it, we're applying due diligence, we're mitigating our risks all of the time. And then hopefully we will create that environment which genuinely is intolerant to modern slavery and worker exploitation.
Justin, fantastic. Rachel, can you come in, please? I'm positive, Justine, that Justine, don't go. Stay with us. With your understanding, and you're so eloquent in expressing this to the fact that we need to collaborate. And again, it's something that we've learned over the last year and all these broadcasts that we've done, collaborating. And that so many suppliers are under extreme margin pressure because the fresh food sector doesn't get the margin aspirations in comparison to other food areas or other areas within the retail sector. And so sometimes that there are corners that have been cut, but we can't let this happen because we're dealing with people. We're dealing with real people's lives here. Justin, thank you very, very much. We'll come back to you in the Q&A. And thanks. We've got some great questions coming in already. Susan, Jeff, and Antoinette, thank you very much. We'll come to those a little bit later. So Justin, if you can turn off your video now. Rachel, she's very good, isn't she?
Yes.
Yeah, but we also know that you're also fantastic. So what I want to concentrate with yourself on is this amazing idea that you had with Unseen about this helpline. Just talk us through the thinking of why you set up the helpline, please.
Sure. We wanted really a one-stop shop, a central hub where anyone with any concern around modern slavery could call for free at any time. So sometimes victims are in situations, of course, of exploitation, and they want to speak with us directly and describe their situation and hear about what options are available. We have business members, as we've just discussed, who are concerned about their business and they might call in. We have members of the community who might see something suspicious and they call in. And we also provide statutory support to agencies such as the police and medical professionals and local authority officers. So we have a really wide range of callers. And the idea was that anyone could call us, whether it was about a specific case or wanting information in general. And we would be able to speak to them confidentially. We have trained advisors who are very informed about what are the issues, but also what are the service options. And we can walk through what services might be available to a potential victim or someone helping that victim. And then we thought it was very important that they could call us any time of day. Of course, unfortunately, modern slavery does not restrict itself to business hours. So we are quite committed to being there at 2 a.m. if that's when it's needed.
Wow. So I'm sure you've had this rubbish analogy. It's a bit like Samaritans, but for modern day slavery, you're there 24/7 to be reached out to assist.
Correct. We also have translation services because, of course, we know that many victims, English is not their first language. Looking at our data from the prior year, we had 80 different nationalities represented from victims that were reported to us for our modern slavery cases. So it's really important, of course, that we can speak with them in a language in which they're very comfortable. And we get calls about lots of different issues. It's been really exciting since the launch of the helpline to see our calls grow year on year. With the pandemic, of course, we saw an increase in volume, but we get reports about sexual exploitation, domestic servitude, criminal exploitation. There's situations of county lines that you mentioned earlier that we see more and more in the UK with teenagers. But every year, consistently, labor exploitation is the biggest proportion of calls we get. Yeah. Again, in 2020, 33% of our modern slavery cases were in labor exploitation. And when we dig into that and we look at that a little bit more, we consistently see agriculture and farming as a sector and an industry that keeps coming up. And in 2020, again, yeah, that was the fourth most common industry. We had 43 cases of exploitation reported to us in 2020 in the agriculture farm sector. So we're trying to provide all those services, but particularly, of course, to those in need. And we see it in this industry as well. We provide the translation, as I mentioned, in the conversations over the phone, but we also have web forms and apps. So if someone isn't able to actually have a conversation, they can send us a quick little confidential email. People can remain anonymous if they want to. And we've been able to actually make referrals and work with partners in the police on very scant, very short anonymous web forms, and then actually saw the police work and be able to pull victims out of a situation and offer them support. So that happens quite a lot. Also offer a range of services when we're speaking with someone. So in addition to describing the support that would be available to them in the UK, we also care for the person on the phone in that moment. So quite often, particularly with survivors or victims who have faced an enormous amount of trauma, they might need a bit of emotional support. You mentioned the Samaritan. So we also have callers that need to talk through what's happened to them and kind of understand the impact of the trauma and what they might be experiencing mentally, physically, and emotionally. We also talk about safety planning, how they can remain safe in a very unsafe situation if they're not quite ready to tell us where they are or if they're not leaving the situation. And then, of course, we work with our partners when they are ready to leave the situation to make sure that they can leave and reach services in their area or that's provided by the government easily. And then I mentioned a little bit of our data already. That's another key piece of what the helpline does. We really view the helpline as having kind of two pillars. One is that case by case, serving those that are calling us situation by situation. And the other is what are we learning and the aggregate information. And so we want to look at it periodically, monthly, quarterly, and yearly, and be able to feed back to the sector and our external partners to say what we're seeing and then really push the needle forward in prevention as well so that people don't need the helpline in the future and we can really start decreasing the amount of exploitation occurring.
Rachel, can I just say, I had a lovely comment in from Rebecca Webb. Rebecca, thank you. I think this is going to make my day. Hello, I'm the ethical trade officer from the co-op, and I just wanted to say we're actively supporting and collaborating on the Unseen Helpline and Business Portal and already seen huge benefit to identification and redemption through the helpline and portal tool. Rebecca, thank you. That's just brilliant because that's just really pushes what Justine and Rachel are looking to do. Rachel, if it's okay to ask, and I don't want you to break any confidence, but what sort of people become victims and hopefully become survivors? What sort of victims, what sort of people end up being involved in modern day slavery?
Yeah, I think the first point here is that there's no one type of victim. I think there's a bit of a myth to think that, well, it only happens to foreign nationals or it only happens to perhaps gullible individuals. And to people that aren't familiar with how it can happen, they might think, well, I would never have fallen for that recruitment scheme or a job offer. So I think the first thing is that it happens to a really diverse range of people from varying backgrounds. We've had victims reported to us who were highly educated with PhD and graduate degrees. And of course, we also have victims that are unfortunately may have less education, or maybe a push factor into their exploitation was poverty. They might have been homeless and recruited even through a shelter. So there are different vulnerabilities that we see patterns where exploiters might prey on those vulnerabilities, such as learning disabilities or poverty, as I mentioned, or perhaps immigration status. So sometimes a method of control might be that an exploiter would threaten to expose their immigration status. So it definitely happens to foreign nationals in the UK. But as I mentioned, it also happens to UK nationals. Consistently, for our reports, England is one of the top five nationalities that we see year on year reported to us. So it's definitely happening locally and globally, and we can see that transition of individuals that have been exploited. And then they're recruited a variety of ways. I mentioned a job advertisement. Sometimes it can look very legitimate, and it's difficult to see from the outside that it's going to be a situation of exploitation, which is one of the reasons we wanted the helpline, because individuals do fall into these really dangerous cycles of abuse and work, and they might need help. We also see sometimes victims with past abuse or past trauma preyed upon, because if perhaps they've had unfortunate experiences in their past that they're still recovering from, sometimes exploiters will kind of twist that with them as well, and then use that against them, basically, to try to lure them into a situation of exploitation.
And again, age-wise, I'm guessing, as per my example with Justine, county lines, kids, all the way to mature adults, that's
exactly. A very wide range of age. This year, we saw more minors actually reported to the helpline than ever before. It was about 10% in 2020, it was about 10% of the victims were minors. And as you've mentioned, it's often the case in criminal exploitation. And we see a lot of domestic victims there from the UK. But yes, a wide range. We've had cases of grandparents being exploited well into their 60s, 70s, and 80s. So there really is no age limit. That being said, the most common age demographic is right around 25 to 35. That's where we see most people exploited, particularly in labor exploitation. We see a pretty good spread around gender. However, in labor exploitation, again, we see males usually are reported more often. In 2020, it was around 45% of male victims reported as potential victims of labor exploitation. That can change with different types of exploitation. For example, we see more women when it's a situation of sexual exploitation. So gender can be an issue and might make someone more vulnerable or be a factor with the type of exploitation that we're looking at.
Thank you, Rachel. And I love this expression of train the trainer. Could you give us just a bit of a masterclass as to how we can spot, identify, what are the indicators so that people listening in can just see, and they can start, what's the other expression? It's a bit like red minis. You start talking about red minis, you see red minis everywhere. If you can give us just an understanding as to indicators as to what we should be looking out for, so that everyone on this call can start talking about this within their colleagues. And so they can all start looking, what would be your...
Definitely.
Your response, please.
Well, going off of your red minis, we actually see that correlation in areas where there's increased awareness or campaigns, or when the media is covering it, our calls increase. So if there's a campaign about a particular sector or in a particular area, more people call us. And I don't think it's because there's more exploitation happening that month of the campaign. It's just because, as you mentioned, the community is aware of it. So excellent point. It really makes a difference when we have informed communities. With respect to labor exploitation, there's a couple of things we would encourage people to look for. One would be, does it look like workers are arriving to work on their own, or perhaps are they escorted to work? And sometimes in a group, perhaps in the back of a van that's not actually a passenger van. And then that might imply that they're being monitored, that they're not able to come and go as they like. We might look at their living situation. We often see tight accommodation an issue. So if they're living situation is provided by the employer, or if they're just in a crowded situation that doesn't have proper electricity or running water, etc., that's often an indicator that something is going on there, and it's often tied to their work. We would also be looking, are they properly trained? Do they have proper work equipment? Do they seem ready and equipped to do the job? Or do they work really long hours? And there would be an indication that they're not being paid properly. We often see and hear from victims, of course, that they're not paid, and they're not paid national minimum wage, of course. And so if it looks like they're being transported to work really early in the morning and left there all day, and they're not going to get lunch, and then they're transported away from the site, that's a problem. Additionally, if it looks like workers are living on site, if there's a sleeping bag on a construction site, or if the accommodations at a farm agricultural setting is not up to standard, that could also be a real sign that they're not being taken care of, and they're not allowed to go home to a comfortable and safe place. We also see oftentimes victims have their identification taken from them. So if the employer is withholding their passport or their ID, that's another sign that really the employer or someone is in control of that person. I think one other really key thing to flag for any business is that we're also seeing exploitation happen outside of the work site. So you might think, well, that it's only the employer doing this, but oftentimes we see wages taken off of someone, and they might be employed quite legitimately and paid normally like everyone else, except someone is exploiting them outside of the workplace. Yep. So I think there's another call to action there to really be aware of the well-being of your staff, because it could be actually that someone's exploiting them out of your eyesight, but you could still see the signs of that day to day.
Can I just give you my little snippet? I have visited thousands of food businesses over the last 20 years in the UK and overseas. If you want to find anything else about a particular business on site, don't ask the MD, ask the forklift driver, because they know everything that's going on. And I'm obviously being slightly glib with a forklift driver analogy, but it's those people on the ground. They see everything coming and going. Those sat up on high who might profess, we don't have any issues here, they are slightly sat up on their ivory tower. They're quite often very remote. You need to ask the people on the floor, because they're in it and they see it and they know. So that, again, to drive this societal change, no one wants to have someone sleeping on site in a sleeping bag at the back of a bunch of pallets. And so if you're not brave enough, if you've got that moral compass to think, well, we might have a problem, who will know? It's the guys and girls who are here 7 days a week and just see all the movements, and they're just picking up everything that's going. So that's just my little penny's worth there. Just ask the team on the floor, because they'll have a better understanding. Rachel, what can we do as consumers and members of the public to try and stop this? Because I go back to that conversation I had with your CEO, Andrew, and as he stated, Max, all the kit you're using will have been touched. And so I'm now looking out for any stuff that I'm looking to buy, but it's so difficult to sort of track it down. You can't exactly go into Amazon and say, well, I'm going to buy a new computer, and there's a sticker there saying this has not been touched by modern day slavery. Well, that'd be fantastic if there was, and your logo on there as well. But what's your advice to us as members of the public? What can we do as members of the public and consumers to stop that exploitation?
Definitely. Well, first of all, as members of the public, watching and listening to podcasts like this is important, because you become informed. And then we would ask that, I personally, unfortunately, don't think it's a matter of if you ever see a situation of exploitation in your personal or professional life. I think it's a matter of when. And so if you're informed, then the next ask is that you report it, that you say something. Sometimes callers are timid and they think, well, I don't know if it's a situation of modern slavery. That's okay. If something doesn't feel right, if just in your gut you think this is a little fishy, give us a call. Our team are trained and they'll know what to ask you. Just call us if you've got any concern. And I think encourage your friends, employees, circles, communities to call as well. The more people that are on the lookout, of course, as the eyes and ears looking for this exploitation increase, the more will report to us. Out of labor exploitation, the most common caller we had were just members of the community who are telling us about pretty egregious labor violations and concerns. So that is really important. I think second, in your professional life, within your business, you mentioned, you know, speaking to the forklift driver. We'd say put up helpline posters, have a confidential route for someone to reach out. Sometimes employees or workers are hesitant to report to their supervisor naturally. There's a power difference, maybe a language difference, and they don't want to tell the place where they work. But if you've got a way for them to report confidentially to an independent organization, then we're there. We can talk to them in their language, and they might open up and say, actually, this is happening to my colleague, or this is happening to me when I'm not at work. And we could actually offer a bit of support to the business as well as the victim, if that's what's appropriate. You mentioned, what can we do as consumers? Justine also often says that we need like a blue planet moment equivalent to the modern slavery sector. We really need that demand. We need consumers to be asking questions and looking and supporting responsible businesses and applauding those that are taking leadership in this area, of which there are several. You read out a quote from a business just now. And I think, unfortunately, this is also, I'm stealing from Justine. Sometimes it feels as if when we look at, for example, ethical practices around animals, it seems sometimes to us that the consumer might care more about the welfare of the chicken than the welfare of the humans and the workers caring and raising that food. And so I think it's about raising awareness and demand in the political sphere as well, that it's important, of course, that those that are caring for and growing our food are taken care of.
Yeah. And I go back to my my county lines conversation with the police and 500 people, and the chief constable saying that these children are getting involved in modern day slavery, and that mum saying to that other mum, slavery, what's he talking about? And it's almost as if we're trying to, well, not brush it under the carpet, but we don't want to talk about it. It's almost like we're uncomfortable about it. And I was so uncomfortable when Andrew, again, I come back to the same thing, Max, everything you're touching has been involved with it. And that's why we need to stop being uncomfortable about it and highlight it. Justine, can you come back in? Because we're just going to roll on to the Q&A session, just looking at the time. And Justine, as you're coming in, I'm just going to ask a question of Rachel off the bat from Alexandra Dennis. Rachel, I'm from a standard setting organisation in agriculture. How far would you consider collaborating with schemes, setting organisations, running schemes of social compliance? One of the main questions is, what is the role of auditors and their sphere of influence? And Alexandra, would love to contact you in that regard. And the secondary question from us, how do you follow up with victims for concrete details to sanction or to remediate who want to stay anonymous? Sorry, Rachel, I'm throwing lots of questions at you. Are you okay to have a go at them?
Sure. I'll speak first a little bit to the victims, and I can touch on the auditors, but I'm sure Justine will have some things she wants to say about that as well. With respect to victims, we at the Helpline take a victim-centered approach and really encourage anyone who's working with or thinks that their staff member or someone might be a victim to do the same. And by that, we mean take it at their pace. It can be difficult if you want to rush in and help and you think you know what's best. And even with the best of intentions, you can sometimes alienate the survivor or the victim, or worst case scenario, put them in a more dangerous situation because they could be monitored. Someone could be monitoring their phone. Someone could be watching who they talk to when they pick them up. And it's just really important that you basically don't do anything you wouldn't normally do. And call us unseen or an organization so that you've got more information around how to interact with victims, understanding what trauma they've gone through, how to communicate with them. Because if you ask them questions in an office setting, they might feel interrogated, like they've done something wrong. And indeed, the exploiter has probably told them they're at fault and they've done something wrong and no one will believe them and they'll get fired or something. And so I think really changing that power dynamic is important. And so even the way you speak to victims is important. We talk about, you know, even open-ended questions and real specific tactics, but having perhaps an NGO advocate with you when you're interacting with a survivor or a suspected victim, I think can be really helpful. But being really aware of their safety situation, not calling them at home, getting consent from them about how to work with them is really important. And then being patient. They might need some time to think through what's going on and build up trust with you or anyone. And that's okay and good. With respect to auditors, I'm going to turn that over to Unseen to Justine, because I think she'll have more to say.
Justine, before you go live with that, I said to Rachel that, Justine, you're fantastic. Isn't Rachel fantastic?
Yes, definitely. We make a good team.
Yeah, what a team you've got at Unseen. Justine, over to you.
So in answer to the question, yes, we've looked at schemes both from a government perspective when I was in the Home Office, but also since I joined Unseen as well. I think schemes are great as long as we don't have a scheme that is focused on saying that we have no modern slavery or it's modern slavery free, because I think you are on a hiding to nothing if you try and do that. But I think from an auditing perspective, I think audits have a role to play and continue to do so. But I think we've historically focused far too much on audits and not much else. And we've got many auditing schemes, that purport to give you everything that you need to know about a supplier, for example. And I would argue that that's only part of the conversation. When we work with businesses, we talk about, you know, the supplier codes of conduct and making it really clear about the expectations on the supplier and what the supplier can expect from you, because it's not just one way. We need to make sure that it's two ways. If you're going in toward it, what are you looking at in terms of people management, in terms of how people are employed and the recruitment and the environment within which they're working? And you know, it's not just around making sure that you are hitting all of your legal requirements, but actually you've got worker welfare at the heart of what you're doing as well. And for me, many of the auditing platforms will provide you with the information, but actually then a business or a supplier never really follows through on any non-conformance issues. So it's really about that continuous improvement that I mentioned earlier, about making sure that audits can play an integral role in moving forward and continuously improving, but also making sure that where you've got those non-conformers, that you're actually learning lessons. Why did it happen in the first place? What are we going to do to prevent it? How do we make sure that we're aware of anything that might happen as we move forward? So I think there's an opportunity to really, as I said earlier, collaborate, because I think this requires you know, many organisations to come together and say, we don't want to accept this. We do want to make our environment more intolerant. How can we do that? And how can we not set ourselves up to fail by making an assumption that we can make our products or services slavery-free when we've got people hell-bent on infiltrating supply chains?
Yeah. Justin, well done. Ladies, a question from Mark Heath. What do you think will be the impact on modern slavery of the points-based system and changes work by the new immigration rules? Rachel?
I think we're still waiting to see really a lot of the impact from Brexit and the change in immigration. That being said, immigration is inextricably linked to situations of modern slavery and exploitation. And generally, we have seen that as there are fewer and more difficult routes to migrate and work, that exploitation tends to increase, that still there's a need for a workforce, and unfortunately it will be pushed further underground. And so that's a correlation that we do see and we're still trying to look at quite carefully. And I think we'll continue to kind of see how that plays out a little bit going forward. That being said, sometimes it's difficult to prove the theory, of course, because a lot of this is invisible, but that's what we've seen to date. Justine, do you want to say more on that?
Yeah, all I would say is that I think, you know, it does drive it further underground. So when we look back at all of the individuals that we've helped and supported, many of them are legitimately here in the UK. So will have come over, will have a right to work because they're from the EU. Obviously, as we clamp down on the low paid, low skilled workforce being able to come from elsewhere, where will we get those workers from? I've already had many conversations with businesses who are saying that we're starting to find it more difficult to get that temporary and seasonal labour. And so as you start to develop that context where it is more difficult to find those workers, then perhaps we've got an opportunity for those who are going to perpetrate and exploit others to actually infiltrate those supply chains with people who might not necessarily be here legitimately and working. So, you know, only in September last year, we put out a very short assessment of the cases that we were getting with people that were coming over in small boats. And it was something that we hadn't really seen before in the helpline. And I think, you know, immigration is so intertwined with what we're dealing with. And we know that that is one of the fear factors for the individuals that we work with. So if they don't have regularised status, and that might be because they're here illegally and they've come in the back of a lorry, and that happens sometimes. But it might also be that they're on a visa, but they're working outside of their visa requirements, or they've had a visa and it's expired. in all of those scenarios, they are vulnerable. They're at increased risk, and the perpetrators and the exploiters know that. So they will use that as a control method, get them to work, and then they are infiltrating them. They are financially exploiting them because they will get paid legitimately. They might be on false documents, and we've seen that before as well. And we'll continue to see that. But all of the money is taken from them. So for all intents and purposes, as Rachel said earlier, you know, we've got legitimate businesses employing what they see as a legitimate worker, but actually the backstory is totally different. And that's why we need to keep this awareness up. That's why we need to continue to work with businesses and work collaboratively.
Well said. Guys, we're just slightly running out of time on the proverbial meter. So just one technical question. Is it a technical question? Is stating the modern day slavery in a website, company website, is that a mandatory legal requirement?
The actual statement. So if you produce a statement, you have to set out the steps you've taken, whether they're good or bad. You need it approved by the board. You need it signed by a director, and it needs to be on the front page of your website. Now, if you have several websites, it should be the one that's most appropriate. So it is a legal requirement to have it, a link to the statement on your homepage. It shouldn't be hidden in and down, you know, several different menu options.
Justin, thank you. So let's wind this broadcast up. It's been fantastic having Justine and Rachel on. I've learned so much more over and above the initial conversation I had with Andrew Wallace, the CEO. But ladies, over to you. How would you like to summarise? How would you like to create change in the fresh food sectors by people deploying Unseen UK? Rachel, you go first.
Be honest about the fact that it's happening, that it's going to happen within your sector. You're going to see it, or perhaps one of your workers will be unfortunately exploited. Don't be scared to get help about it. There's no judgment from Unseen anyway. We're here to help and support both you and the victim through the situation. And Justine will have more to say, I'm sure, about continuous improvement, but it's just that no one has all of the answers. No one is completely risk-free, and it's just about being realistic and mitigating that risk. And then sharing information and demanding it, as I said earlier, both increased better policies, but then also in your community, being on the lookout and reporting any situation.
Rachel, fantastic. Justine, over to you.
I think really everything that Rachel said, but don't take your eye off the ball. The moment you do that, something will happen. And with Unseen, we are working with businesses right across the spectrum. We want to give businesses an understanding of what's happening on the ground. And this relates back to the question earlier from Co-op. You know, we're working with lots of different businesses. Come and work with us. See how we can help you raise awareness. See how we can help strengthen your resolve and make you more resilient to the risk that's out there. And as Rachel said, the risk is there. It's not the if, it's the when. And so what you need to do is prepare yourself for that and be ready to take the action that you need to, that protects the worker, that protects your business, but use the helpline as a resource to get that information, help and advice. And as I said, come and work with us. Let us help you to understand what those risks are and how you can minimise them.
Well, everyone, what a power for good. Justine, Rachel and the team at Unseen UKR. I'm just going to go back to this comment that Rebecca very kindly dialed in, because it's such a great comment. Hello, I am an ethical trade officer from the Co-op, and I just wanted to say we're actively supporting and collaborating on the Unseen helpline and business portal, and already seen huge benefit to identification and assistance through the helpline and portal tool. So Co-op, Unseen UK, if you're a business in fresh food and you're worried, concerned about modern day slavery, you've got to engage with Justine, you've got to engage with Rachel and the rest of the team. Just want to say a big thank you to Tom at Unseen, and also to Andrew for setting this up. And ladies, if it's okay, we'd love to get you back on and say another 6 months and just see how things, just to keep this conversations going. And I think I asked Andrew, we put your logo up here because we just want to keep again this conversation going. Before I let you go, I just need to ask you one question, which we always ask: what is your favorite fresh produce? Rachel, you go first.
I quite like avocados. You mentioned them earlier, but I quite like them.
Okay, so how do you like to have your avocados?
Oh, with eggs on toast.
With eggs? Oh, that's it. Come on, Justine, you've got to knock this one out of the park. What's your favourite fresh veggies?
She's actually stolen mine, so I'm going to go for something else now. I'm going to say locally produced asparagus.
Oh, wow, brilliant. Excellent. Well, just a combination of the two. There you go. Justine, Rachel, you've been fantastic. You're doing such a positive change in this sector for something that's not really been talked about and debated too much, in my opinion. Anything we could do to help. And if you want to link in with Justine, Rachel, look out for them on LinkedIn. Also look out for them on the Unseen UK website. We'll do all the links. Website's brilliant. Helpline's brilliant. Ladies, you're brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.